Hey everyone, you're listening to Whence Came You, a Freemasonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Brother Active Move. I'd like to say the thing that makes the Midnight Freemason successful is its original content. So what I want to ask all of you, not just the scholars, but all of you, if you have an interesting story about you, your lodge, or a research topic, and it's original, meaning you wrote it, send it to me at the email address wcypodcast@gmail.com, and in the subject header, type submission. I'll review them, and if the main panel thinks it's good to go, then we can put it up on the website. And of course, you'll have full credit for your work. Just something to think about. Also, I have a new phone number for the show, which is what I will use to do the phone interviews and to converse with anyone who doesn't have my number already. So if you are interested in doing an interview, send me a request to that same email address, wcypodcast@gmail.com, and in the subject field, type interview, include your name, phone number, and your position, and what you'd like to be interviewed for. For instance, if you head up a special research project that you want to hype, something along those lines, but it has to be Masonically themed. So the first piece for this week is actually two articles from the California Freemason. The first is entitled, Reinventing the Research Lodge. Reinventing the Research Lodge in California. As Mother Lodges introduce more Masonic education, research lodges must redefine their purpose. By Laura Normand. At the end of the 19th century, we were the laughingstock of the academic world. When I ask John Cooper about the origins of Masonic research lodges, this is how he begins, bluntly. Cooper, California's Deputy Grand Master and past Grand Secretary, is a member and fellow of several research lodges across the country, as well as second Vice President to the Philalethes Society, the largest and oldest Masonic research society in the United States. The stuff that Masons produced was fantastical, under no standards of analysis, he continues. The last part of the 19th century was an important time for the study of history. There were some great monumental writers. But there we were, he says, wandering around in the swamp. Research Revolution. In 1884, nine brothers founded Couture Coronati Lodge No. 2076 under the United Grand Lodge of England. Its mission, as recorded on its present-day website, was to replace the imaginative writings of earlier authors on the history of Freemasonry. More research lodges soon sprang up around the world, attracting well-educated members, many of whom were professional scholars, particularly in non-English-speaking countries, where research was and is a central part of a candidate's degree requirements. These lodges followed rigorous scholarly standards, producing scores of research papers on the history of Masonry. In the United States, as the fraternity boomed and lodges rushed to keep up with the degree conferrals, research lodges filled a different role. Most became a destination for those who simply wanted more education. If a member wanted an outlet to talk about and study Masonry, he joined the closest research lodge. Today, research lodges still exist in every major Grand Lodge in the world. Some, like Couture Coronati Lodge, continue to produce papers of great scholarly merit. Others focus on topics of local interest, often presenting short talks to members and the public for education or entertainment. Historically, California's research lodges fell under this category. But these days, that's not necessarily the case. Challenged to change. In many ways, the future of California research lodges boils down to supply and demand. The demand is there. Members are still hungry for Masonic education, but supply is also skyrocketing. More than ever, mother lodges are finding ways to implement Masonic education programs themselves. At lodges like Prometheus, No. 851 in San Francisco, hardly a meeting goes by without a paper or a presentation, and research lodges are at a crossroads. Jordan Jelinek is a master of Prometheus Lodge and a past master of Northern California Research Lodge. Lodges are beginning to fill the void in education, once filled by research lodges, Jelinek says. So research lodges have to ask ourselves, how do we remain viable and necessary? How can we still contribute to the craft in some meaningful way? Currently, California has five research lodges, each with a different answer. In Fullerton, Southern California Research Lodge has attracted a staggering 3,000 members from around the globe by focusing on user-friendly education and information. It produces a monthly review of instructive Masonic articles sourced from publications worldwide that's ready-made for the candidate education and stated meeting talks. Golden Compass's Research Lodge in Folsom, California's newest research lodge, aims to create an online library of original research papers. And in San Francisco, NCRL has rebranded itself as a Masonic grad school. NCRL leaders realized that many of their members, despite being dedicated students of Masonry, had little experience writing a research paper or speaking on a topic. Jelinek, a cell biologist, suggested a collaborative method he and fellow scientists had used during graduate school. The lodge now sets aside stated meeting time for each member to give a very short update on his current research project, followed by an in-depth presentation by one member. Everyone offers feedback. When members go back to their mother lodges to give talks, they gathered information from as many sources as they can. They've refined their work, Jelinek says. The first time we used the collaborative method, the members interacted in a way I hadn't seen in my 4 years there. Guys sitting on the sidelines were saying, "I read this. What do you think of this?" Or, "That reminds me." Or, "That reminds me of a talk I attended. Have you thought about that?" The next 100 years. The NCRL has also created the John L. Cooper III Fellowship, named in honor of the Deputy Grand Master. The fellowship is an annual titled lectureship from an honored scholar. This is already a popular model in other states. For example, the Texas Lodge of Research brings in world-renowned scholars for its Anson Jones Lectureship. For NCRL, the fellowship will further distinguish the lodge's work, giving it more visibility nationwide. The 2012 recipient was Bradley Kent Cooney, Senior Grand Steward of the Grand Lodge of Connecticut. Other research lodges must identify and begin carving their own niche as well. "I'm hoping that in the future research lodges will continue to evolve," Cooper tells me. "This generation of Masons is very interested in what Freemasonry is, what its teachings and philosophies are," he adds. "There's an eagerness and interest there. Research lodges need to respond to that changing environment." What's in your personal Masonic library? Recommended reading from California Masonic leaders include Coyle's Masonic Encyclopedia, Mackey's Revised Encyclopedia of Freemasonry, 100 Years of Freemasonry in California. And there are several more references by the author. Next is a piece from that same issue, entitled Tales from a Masonic Pen. Tales from a Masonic Pen, History, Discovering the Fraternal Life of Mark Twain, by Heather Borner. Mark Twain, born Samuel Langhorne Clemens, was the trickster, storyteller of American letters. So it should be no surprise that he applied his particular brand of observation to the Masonry as well. Take, for instance, his description of a character in his 1897 Tom Sawyer's Conspiracy. He was inside sentinel of the Masons, an outside sentinel of the Oddfellows, and a kind of headbung starter or something of the foes of the Flowing Bowl, and something or other to the daughters of Rebecca, and something like it to the king's daughters, and royal grand warden to the knights of morality, and sublime grand marshal of the good templars, and there warn't no fancy apron a-going, but he had a sample, and no turnabout, but he was in the procession with his banner, or his sword, or toting a Bible on a tray, and looking awful serious and responsible, and yet not getting a cent, a good man he was. They don't make no better. The idea of the 19th century man as a brother to many and a joiner of multiple fraternal organizations is not based on Twain's own life, a Mason for a scant 8 years less. If you include a period in which his dues went unpaid, there is nonetheless evidence that the craft had an indelible influence on Twain. Twain was born in 1835 in Missouri. The death of his father and his natural intellect sent him to work before his teens as a newspaper typesetter. Shortly thereafter, he was a columnist at his brother's newspaper, where he later became assistant editor, and when his brother was out of town, boldly whipped up a feud with another local paper. Twain found homes throughout the United States, from St. Louis to New York, Philadelphia, small town Iowa, and New Orleans. He worked many years as a newspaper man, a typesetter, before taking up the unlikely vocation of river pilot. Eventually, he'd also work as a miner, serve briefly in the Confederate Army, tour the Hawaiian Islands, and live abroad. By the time Twain became an entered apprentice at Polar Star Lodge No. 79 in St. Louis, he'd already published his first story, The Dandy Frightening the Squatter. but just after he was raised to Master Mason in July of 1861, he left Missouri and his lodge to join his brother in Nevada. Not long after, he continued his journalism career, working as an editor for the Nevada newspaper, as well as several other, sometimes under his own name, and other times favoring pseudonyms. During his travels, Twain stopped paying his lodge dues, and his Masonic membership was suspended. But his association with Masonry was not at its end. In February 1865, Twain served as senior deacon at Bear Mountain Lodge No. 75 in California's Gold Country. Later that year, he published his first well-received short story, the celebrated Jumping Frog of Calaveras County. Using the keen observation of a journalist and the humor of a fiction writer, Twain soon found himself writing travelogues of his trips to Europe and around the West for magazines in New York, some of which were turned into books. Lecture tours followed. Unfortunately, as Twain's career blossomed, his participation in the fraternity waned. He demitted in 1869, but it appears that Masonry still remained on his mind. In 1868, Twain traveled to Jerusalem and cut a branch from a cedar tree just outside the city walls. He had it made into a gavel, which he sent back to his lodge in St. Louis with this uncharacteristically serious note, quote, "This mallet is a cedar, cut from the forest of Lebanon, whence Solomon obtained the timbers for the temple," end quote. The following decade, Twain's most famous works were published, The Prince and the Pauper, The Adventures of Tom Sawyer, and The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. By this time, he had been long married and had a family. In his later years, however, Twain had a run of bad luck. Bad investments left him struggling financially. His publishing house went under. His wife, Livy, and daughters, Susie and Jean, passed away. Twain's mood perhaps understandably darkened, a change that was clearly reflected in his autobiographical writing. And yet, in these moments of despair, Twain seemed to find solace in concepts of Masonry. In 1900, a decade before his death and many years after he demitted, Twain stood before a New York City Lotos Club, a club of writers of which Twain was a member, and spoke of the pain that had befallen him and the world. Quote, "7 years ago, when I was old and worn down, you gave me the grip and the word which lifts a man up and makes him glad to be alive," he told the group. "I come back from my exile fresh and young and alive, ready to begin anew." All right, this week's famous Freemason is William A. Brodie. Brodie was born in a village in Kilbarkin, Scotland, on August 9, 1841. When he was 2 years old, his parents immigrated to America to begin a new life. They settled in the state of New York. William became a successful businessman. Brodie was the county treasurer of Livingston County for 15 years. Brodie was additionally the president of the Geneseo Gas Company and the Geneseo Electric Company. He was an elder in the Presbyterian Church of Geneseo from 1868 until his death. He was raised November 9, 1863, in Genesee Lodge No. 214. He was a junior warden in 1867 in Genesee Lodge No. 214. Senior warden, 1868, in the same lodge. Master from 1869 to 1871, and then again 1875 to 1877, and in 1880 in Genesee Lodge No. 214. He was a member of Knights Templar Monroe Commandery No. 12 in 1873. He received the Scottish Rite 33rd degree in Rochester Consistory. He became a Sovereign Grand Inspector General on September 25, 1885. He joined the Royal Arch in 1867. During his term as Grand Master of New York in 1884, he laid the foundation stone of the Statue of Liberty. When asked why Freemasons would be asked to place the foundation stone, he replied, "No other organization has done more to promote liberty and to liberate men from the chains of ignorance and tyranny than Freemasonry." He laid the foundation stone of the Statue of Liberty on August 5th, 1884, as a Grand Master of New York. Brother William Brodie laid down his working tools on May 9th, 1917. That's it for this week. Remember to find us on Facebook, follow on Twitter, and listen via our apps on Android, Apple, Stitcher, or Roku via the Blueberry Podcast channel. Email me any articles you want to submit or interview requests. Stay on the level, everyone. Until next week, for Whence Came You? I'm Robert Johnson.